Welcome to the ICC podcast, Intelligence Career Conversations. I'm your host, Jim Donnelly, and it is a great honor to introduce our esteemed guest for this episode, Trent Taima. Trent serves as the founding principal of CSG Strategies, Inc., where he provides guidance to government and businesses on matters of integrity and counter threat, specializing in national security, cybersecurity, infrastructure protection, blockchain, space, and policy. With a wealth of experience as a CISO, CSO, CTO, and CRO, Trent is an active advisor to boards of directors and C-suites, offering insights at the nexus of technology, policy, regulation, and security. He also holds a position as a council member for the Loomis Council at the Stimson Center. Excuse me. Mr. Taima, illustrious career includes his role as the founder and leader of the FBI's National Center, Cyber Center Investigative Joint Task Force. He's retired from the FBI as the Chief Operating Officer and Chief of Cyber Readiness with the Cyber Division. His influence extends even further, having been appointed twice to cybersecurity policy positions within the White House National Security Council during the Bush 43 and Obama administrations. Trent, welcome and glad to have you on today's podcast.
Thank you, Jim. I'm glad to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
You're very welcome. Well, let me start off with Trent. Who or what was the source of your motivation to pursue a career in national security?
So it's actually the story is, I guess my origin story is when I was 12 years old, I had the opportunity to go on a tour. I grew up in Portland, Oregon, and my middle school slash high school did a tour called Landmarks Democracy. So when I was 12 years old, we went, and the whole group of school kids came back to Washington, D.C., went all the way up and down the coast from, you know, Norfolk all the way up to New York City. But during the tour, we stopped in Washington, D.C., and I went on the FBI tour. And so I went through the old tour, you go through, and then I saw we went to the FBI range inside, and they did the firearms demonstration. I thought it was the coolest thing I've ever seen. And from 12 years on, that's all I ever wanted to be. So I wanted to be an FBI special agent. I didn't think I'd ever make it. I mean, I can even remember Parade Magazine, if you remember Parade Magazine.
Sure.
Did a whole thing on the FBI's top 10 most wanted, and I kept it. And so that was kind of my goal through high school, where I was a Boy Scout, and actually got involved with my sheriff's department as a law enforcement explorer. And then the whole Iowa prize was trying to get to the FBI. So that's where it started. And I was fortunate enough that they picked me up.
What skills or habits did you rely on to, you know, as you were thinking from the, you know, 12-year-old to entering the academy, what skills did you fall back on to get there?
Yeah, well, so that's, since I always wanted to, so 16 years old, I joined, I was a Boy Scout, and then Boy Scouts of America has a career exploring program. And the Multnomah County Sheriff's Office in Portland, Oregon had a troop. And so I became a sheriff's explorer. And so we did everything from traffic control to crime scenes to go through an academy. I then went on to become a deputy sheriff. And while I was there, I'd hang out in the detective sections. They couldn't get rid of me. So I found my first body when I was 16. And I hung out in homicide, robbery, and what we call CSI now. And so that was kind of the taste. And then when I went on to college, I went to Portland State and ended up, the degree at the time was called Administration of Justice. But my thesis when I graduated was focusing on terrorism, anti-terrorism. So this is 1986 to, you know, 1990 that I knew that was going to be a threat. I saw the rising issues with international terrorism, and that's where it really kind of started pulling towards the national security side, all with hopefully making them more competitive to join the FBI.
Great. No, that's great. How about, was there a specific person that was a mentor to you early in your career while you're thinking about joining the academy? And then can you provide an example also, you know, post once you are in the academy? And in a career within the FBI.
Oh, within the FBI, yeah. So Prior to going to the FBI, I had several mentors. It was like at Portland State University, Dr. Lockwood, Dr. Perlstein were big influences on what to study, where to go. Dr. Perlstein actually specialized in terrorism and low intensity conflict. So it was really unique, especially in the Portland area, that this guy had an international reach. So I hung around there. At the sheriff's department, which was really interesting, they were very forward leaning in technology. So I was actually starting to do digital forensics back then. And it was Sergeant Grattan and Sergeant Orzetti that really kind of took me under their wing. And then when I got to the FBI, at the academy is great. I love the academy. By that time, I think it was my third or fourth. It wasn't until I really got to the Los Angeles field office, my first station, that really, I some real professionals that guide me along the way. My supervisor, Ralph Lumpkin, was probably one of the finest agents I've ever met. So you sit there and learn from him. Then you sidle up to a lot of other agents and supervisors at the time that you work. And the nice thing about Los Angeles is it's such a big program. So I started out on the criminal side, but after about, we stood up the first computer intrusion squad. So I was one of the first four agents doing that. And after about 2 years of doing a lot of first, we ended up before it was trending. So we did this before cyber. The term wasn't there yet. We actually stood up a national security infrastructure protection squad. So I went over to our Joint Terrorism Task Force, and I was on the JTTF in Los Angeles. And then we spun off. So I was on, what was it, NSD6 was the squad. Then we stood up NSD7, which is the incident response squad. So that was hazardous materials, bomb squad, and we recognized the threat to by terrorism for an adversaries to attack systems. And so we did it as a team. So we were this kind of ragtag group of people responding to everything. It was the greatest job ever because we were doing everything from bomb threats to hazmat to intrusions, and way ahead of the curve. So this is 97, 98, 99. And that really, that's I think the one thing that really got me into the national security side. And then I got promoted and went back, and I was assigned to the National Infrastructure Protection Center, which is out of the National Security Division at the FBI, and which is at the time a co-section next to our counterterrorism section and our counterintelligence. And so you're working within that group. Cyber and cybersecurity, that allowed me to work in different divisions because you're that bleeding edge of technology and how the adversary is taking value. So, the Russians, the Chinese, the Iranians, all the way from Los Angeles in the mid 90s forward, we were working against those adversaries. And what did it mean? South African agents trying to foment race wars in Los Angeles is one of the cases I worked on at the time back in the 90s. So you really see the bigger picture and what's going on.
Great. Staying with the mentors you've had, now you've had time, to look back on how they influenced you personally and your career. What would you say made them strong mentors?
So I'll drop a few names. So like Sean Henry, when I got back, he was my unit chief. Very passionate, one of the hardest working men I've ever met. Another one, Howard Schmidt, who actually became the cyber czar. And the thing with Howard Schmidt, he was there both times when I went through the White House, but I met him doing forensics back when I was in the sheriff's department. So it was kind of this long-term relationship, and they take that time. And if you really, there were no classes, there were no schools on this. You had to make it up yourself. So if you wanted to solve it, you had to get a book, and then you had to find an engineer to help work through the things. It was these people with passion and ability, flexible minds that could work through it. It's like, okay, I don't necessarily understand the technology or understand what happened, but I know the adversary is trying to get in. And we're able to work through it. And both of those guys, another individual I mentioned is Chris Painter, is my prosecutor. They were passionate about what they did, and it was that passion you work until you solve the problem.
How about, Trent, can you give us an example of a career pivot point within your career?
Oh boy. There were several because so it's a difficult question because I was doing technology and
Right.
as it related to different whether it's counterintelligence, terrorism, criminal, or research and development, I didn't follow the traditional promotional path. So that actually those pivots happened often. I think a real big pivot point was when I was actually appointed to the White House. I remember going to National Security Council the first time, and the first time I was detailed over there to help transition the NIPC, and we were there to set up this thing called Department of Homeland Security. And so we were all over. There's a group of us working, weekly trying to build this new thing during the Bush administration to set it up. And I think that was a key pivot point in my career early on because it exposed me to the bigger national security apparatus, the National Security Council, all the different intelligence organizations. And it's really important because then I can appreciate it more from the other agency's perspective, whether it was NSA, CIA, DIA, the whole cast of letters. And I got to work with them day to day and see, from their perspective, what was priorities, but also what was within their authorities. And, if you're an FBI agent, you come in and look at it one perspective. If you're with Central Intelligence as an officer, you have a totally different point of view and goals. And so, you think you're not same, you're different, but you kind of overlap. Same thing within NSA. You're all trying to protect the country, but you have a different worldview. That was the biggest thing that allowed me to better understand it. And I think that's what helped me when I went on later on to set up the NCIJTF, when we stood it up, because I understood that there were different perspectives, and especially working very closely now with the military. So really, both their national security and investigative components, and then their main side, the blue or green side, where they're actually soldiers, sailors, airmen, Marines.
Great. No, that's a great example. How about, Trent, was there a memorable moment during your transition to public, to the sector, private sector, excuse me?
Yeah, that's a good question. So when I retired in 2018. I've basically been in law enforcement, national security my entire career. And the interesting thing is, can you make that transition? Because, quite frankly, most people, whether you're in the intelligence community or in the law enforcement community or in the military for that, you're kind of institutionalized because, you get paid X for doing Y job and you move up. And I have a lot of friends that didn't transition as well. I actually transitioned very well because I found out I was very entrepreneurial. And like my first job outside the FBI was a chief technology officer. And I loved the job because I was doing R&D and I was doing, everything from directed energy weapons to, different power sources to cyber to innovative techniques with space. And, as a CTO though, what really came down when we did R&D was, can we sell this? Because we've got a lot of great ideas that you might invest in. But I found out that I was like, well, we're going to table that because if we can't sell it, we can't make money. So I didn't have any problem. I found out I like it a lot. So for me, not so much. Other guys, the one piece of advice I'd give to, if you're looking to retire or leave the community, it's about a year. So a year before you get going, start warming yourself up. You're going to get more job opportunities out of your connections and network than you are from any job posting or recruiter. You may luck into something where you have a job, but that's going to help you. And it takes you about a year to kind of warm that up. And when you go into the next job, that's not going to be your life job because that's the other thing. So you come into it and we join these jobs and you go, okay, well, I'm going to be here for a very long time because I commit. That you may only be there for 12 months, 18 months, and then be on to your next job. Just basically the way private sector is and transition. A lot of people, what I've seen with my friends, have trouble with that change. You know, we're constantly changing just because of the economy. So if you know it's not your last job, it might help you in the kind of getting in your mind in the right frame.
Great. No, it's great advice. Great advice for folks looking to make the move from the public to the private. How about if we look at folks, Trent, the young professionals, you know, folks maybe still in college, universities, or just entering the workforce post-college, what type of advice would you give to them that are interested in joining the IC field as far as what type of maybe different types of sector they should look at or particular roles or particular agencies?
That's a great question. So what I would recommend is start doing your research now. Find out what department or agency you want to be a part of that's part of the community. When you're going to school, study things that make you competitive. But number one, study things you find interesting. And I can use myself as an example. Like I said, I always want to go in the FBI. So I was doing anything they would do to hire us. So at the time, we had five paths. You were a lawyer, an accountant, CPA, an engineer, a linguist, or diversified. I was pre-law. I took accounting in a university, and I just have the accounting gene. I love math. Hate accounting. And so after my second C in accounting, I realized that was not my path. So, you know, a lot of people get this because they think, okay, this is what I want to do. A lot of the time getting into the community, whether you go whatever agency you go to, a lot of it's about timing. So, you know, whether depending on where they are on staffing, on the budget, and going in. So you want to be able to do things that you're interested in and then leverage it over. The first thing, so study what you want and then get involved in those areas that they find that are of value to them. So if it's, you know, maybe data science, maybe AI right now is a big one. If you're doing digital or languages, something that makes you competitive that when you go to do the interview, it makes you stand out. The other thing, make your background easy as somebody who's done backgrounds and, you know, and as you go through all the polygraphs, you know, consider life choices and, you know, it may be easier. Or, hey, you know, times have changed. Well, the community happened. So it's all about risk and behavior. So, you know, you don't want to have a real weird background and a whole bunch of drug usage. That just may knock you out, even though, you know, there's a debate going on. I think that's the best thing is study what you like, make yourself attractive to the community, and they'll find you.
Okay. How about drill down on a little bit? Any lessons learned that, you know, you wish you had done something earlier in your career or knew a skill earlier in your career that would have helped you?
Ooh, that's a good question. I would have paid more attention to my languages. You know, I typically, you know, I did the normal 2, 3, 4 years of language, but it was more academic than really. It wasn't until so because I was doing more national security stuff or more international, I was traveling more. So it's cultures, communities, points of view, and languages make a big deal on that. So if you, you know, it goes a long way even to learn a little bit, but having that, you know, if you get fluent in anything, that's wonderful, but it allows you to travel different parts of the world because, you know, if you're national security, you're looking at threats, both domestic and foreign, but being able to operate in different communities goes a long way. That would be a big, really understanding culture and languages makes a big difference.
Great suggestion and advice. How about is there a particular, I guess, you have so much abundant information out there that you have to consistently be on top of. Is there particular sources that you go to, you talk to, or, you know, for continuous learning, continuous development of your sector? And then I assume, I got to think that continues with, within the private sector as well, as you're advising companies.
It does. It actually, so I'd recommend that anybody, you just know you're going to be continuously learning, not only with current events, but learning the latest languages, computer languages, technologies, like in my field, that keeps you involved. So after I retired, actually, I'm a doctoral candidate now. And, you know, I'm going for my doctor of science in cybersecurity, but really, really helps with my consultancy is the research I'm doing is directly on what I do for my clients. So, you know, directly dialing down on it. Otherwise, there was a period when I retired, it was like trying to stay connected was a lot harder because, you know, you go from being, you know, being having access to the presidential daily brief. You know, we had every day when I was in the FBI, you'd have the 7:30 cyber daily brief. And so I knew what was going on around the world at any given time. I knew the CASA. I knew, you know, you're doing interagency meetings and then you retire and it goes quiet. And so being able to stay involved with what's important, you know, either before you get into the career or after the career, it's very important. So it's being up on current events. What does it mean? Who are the players around the world? That'll make you more competitive.
Great. Well, one last question for you, Trent. It's around workforce, and that would be, you know, any ideas or thoughts that you have around how to attract a talented, diverse pipeline of folks for the IC community?
You know, I think the best thing for the IC community, and a lot's been done for the last several administrations pushing this narrative to attract better people. I think for the IC, it's, you know, Cyber Corps, there's a lot of other programs. I think the paying off the student loans when you're attracting people in. One, so if you're a data scientist now coming out of school, the IC can't compete with what I can. If walking out of school with a data science degree, I'm going to get paid more starting than I would get paid walking to the IC. So the IC has to. And it's not just a clearance. It used to be you get your clearance as that was the reason why you go in. It's coming in and actually having, you know, it's almost golden handcuffs where over a series of years, they pay off your loan. You're getting experience and investing in these people into why it's exciting to be a part of the IC and the national security profession. And then the most likely, get the bug. They'll be connected to it because what you do on a given day, every day is more important than you probably do an entire year at a private company. You know, that influence, you're not going to get rich, but you have more influence. You get exposed to more things. So, you know, at the end of a life, what do you want to look back and say you did? You know, are you going to have these great war stories you can tell at the bar or, you know, hey, I worked at 12 different companies. So I think the IC is really recruiting them and, you know, getting them in the door and then exposing and investing in them so that they want to stay. And I think they would. I think we saw that in the FBI is you get them in and they really see, I got to do some really cool stuff. And that excitement's what will keep them. It was interesting on our thing. It was like the 10-year mark was our biggest, you know, where we'd lose agents. I'm not sure where analysts are. I wasn't tracking that, but, and then it was probably from 10 to 15 was kind of the danger zone because now we've got a senior agent and do they want to do the rest of the hitch before they go or do they stay? But, and that's why, you know, it's like getting them in and keeping them that first 3 to 5 and then at 10 to 15, you know, keeping reinvesting in your talent because that's going to make the decisions you need when trouble comes.
I think it's great response and a great advice. So Trent, again, I want to thank you so much for joining today's podcast. I really enjoyed it. I learned quite a bit. I'm sure our listeners will as well. I hope you have a great rest of your day. And that will conclude today's podcast. Thank you again to Trent and for everyone listening. Have a wonderful day.
Thank you.